I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. No one in this country likes the image of the United States actually operating a gulag. But this year's Amnesty International report delivers just such an image of the U.S. treatment of prisoners at places like Guantanamo Bay. Now, the report doesn't use the word gulag. That reference to Soviet labor camps came from Amnesty's Secretary General. But the language of the report places it among the most critical ever issued by the organization. It talks about the U.S. refusal to properly investigate accusations of torture, and the report goes so far as to suggest that America's leaders themselves should be arrested for approving such behavior. Those leaders, President Bush, General Myers, Vice President Cheney, and Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, have their own tough language to dismiss the accusations.
I'm aware the Amnesty International report is, and it's absurd. It's an absurd allegation. The United States is a country that...
I think it's irresponsible. I think it's absolutely irresponsible. If you look back at this, the policy of this government, where we said we treat
frankly,
people...
Frankly, I was offended by it. I think for Amnesty International to suggest that somehow the United States...
Indeed, that's why the recent allegation that the U.S. military is running a gulag at Guantanamo Bay is so reprehensible. Most would define a gulag.
It seemed like to me they based some of their decisions on the word of concentration camp. And the allegations by people who were held in detention, people who hate America, people that have been trained in some instances to disassemble. That means not tell the truth. And so it was an absurd report.
The head of Amnesty International USA is here today. We'd like to have you join us. Did Amnesty go too far? What do you think about the suggestion that foreign nations have an obligation to investigate and perhaps even arrest President Bush or Secretary Rumsfeld for breaching the Geneva Conventions? Is this, as the president says, absurd, or is it a long overdue demand for accountability? And what about the future of Guantanamo itself? Has it become an international embarrassment, a symbol of abuse, or is it the only way to lock up people who might be terrorists? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me in the studio to discuss Amnesty's report is Bill Schultz. He is Executive Director of Amnesty International USA. It's good of you to join us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now, your boss, the Secretary General of Amnesty International, Irene Khan, described the prison facility in Guantanamo Bay as the gulag of our time. Do you regret her use of that word?
Well, yesterday in the lead editorial, the New York Times called it an apt metaphor, and I think it's gratifying that the Times has weighed in as they have. Now, even Irene Khan has said that this is not meant to be a literal or an exact analogy with the gulags. Clearly, the size of these camps is much smaller than the Soviet gulags. People are not being starved in those camps. They are not being forced into labor. But there are some similarities. There are some similarities with the Soviet camps. The United States is maintaining an archipelago of prisons around this world, many of them secret. We're not just talking about Guantanamo Bay, Abu Ghraib, and Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. Many of those are secret facilities. Some of them are run by foreign countries to whom we have rendered prisoners, and those prisoners are then abused there. In these secret detentions...
Do we know that, though? I mean, if we don't even know where the prisons are, do we know that the prisoners are being abused at these places?
We have had reports from Maha Arar, for example, a Canadian who was rendered to Syria and I think has provided pretty credible testimony that he was mistreated for 11 months by Syria. But there are other similarities, not just the archipelago prisons. Into these secret prisons, into these prisons, people are literally being disappeared. That is, they are being placed in indefinite, incommunicado detention without access to lawyers or judicial systems or to their families. And we know that in some cases they have been mistreated, even tortured, and sometimes killed. Over 100 detainees have died in custody, and 27 of those deaths have been ruled by our own medical examiners to be homicides. So while this is not the same in terms of scale, there certainly is some similarity. And the last point I'd make on this is that whether we Americans like it or not, this is how much of the world perceives Guantanamo and our detention facilities. After all, this comment didn't come from an American Amnesty representative. It came from our Secretary General in London. She herself is a Bangladeshi native. She is reflecting the fact that Amnesty International is a global organization with 2 million members in more than 100 countries. And unfortunately, that is how many around the world perceive it. And we ought to deal with that fact instead of just focusing on the semantics.
The administration says it is dealing with those accusations. It has had a number of investigations at Guantanamo Bay, a number of investigations of what went on at Abu Ghraib. Are you saying that these are show trials, that they don't count?
No, I'm not saying that they're show trials, but they are trials that have been largely conducted by the military or the intelligence community. So far, at least, they have not held high-level military officials responsible. They have focused primarily on the foot soldiers, if you will. One of the greatest penalties that anyone has received is one officer who was reprimanded and fined 1 month's pay. And finally, no civilian authorities, no one in the civilian chain of command, no one other than military at all have been held responsible. And so Amnesty is saying not that all of these investigations are useless, but we're saying we need a 9/11 type commission, a blue ribbon commission, utterly independent, to look at everything, to look at everybody, not just those low-level military officials.
The other thing that Amnesty is saying, and it seems to me to have been lost in this semantic argument over the use of the word gulag, is and these were a part of your remarks when the report was released, and that is the idea that foreign governments, in fact, should be considering arresting President Bush or Donald Rumsfeld or any one of the number of Pentagon lawyers who were a part of drafting the memos in 2002 and 2003. Do you really make an equivalency between Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, for example, and Chilean strongman Augusto Pinochet?
Absolutely not. And we didn't do that. And let me just make a slight amendment to how you characterize what we said.
Yeah.
First of all, we said that the U.S. is the first agent that should be conducting these investigations. That is always the preferable conductor of investigations into potential crimes like this. Secondly, we said that under international law, those countries that are parties to the Geneva Conventions or to the Convention Against Torture, for example, have a legal obligation. If the host country, the home country, fails in its obligations, they have a legal obligation, that's more than 125 countries around the world, to investigate if there are allegations that people have in some way been architects of torture. And if then they find sufficient evidence of it, they have a legal obligation to prosecute if those people are in their sovereign territory.
But I think what you're saying, if I'm paraphrasing your remarks on the report correctly, is that the United States is not doing those internal investigations. And because it's not doing those internal investigations, foreign governments should, in fact, be considering what their obligations are. And that gets us pretty close to the notion of Rumsfeld sitting before the judges in The Hague.
Well, we still have hope, after all, that the U.S. will come to its senses. Senator Carl Levin, who is the ranking Democrat on the Armed Service Committee, has called for exactly the kind of blue ribbon hearings that we're calling for. And let me make clear that the reference to Pinochet was simply a reference to the fact that it was his case that first brought to international attention this legal obligation that I've described. There was no attempt to make an analogy between Rumsfeld and Pinochet.
Let me ask you if you feel that the response to the report, and we listened to all the clips at the beginning of the program, the response to the report is an indication that you did go too far or that you've really touched a nerve with this?
I think it's clearly the latter. Look, we can argue about the semantics if we want, but I assure you this story, I would not be talking to you today, Dick, if the U.S. government, five top U.S. officials, Bush, Cheney, Rice, Rumsfeld, and General Myers, hadn't attacked Amnesty as it has. They're the ones who have given this story legs. Now, I'm happy they have. That wasn't our intent. We didn't set out to try and say something provocative solely in order to get attention to this. But what is true is that we finally are talking about the substance of the issue here.
Let's bring David Rybkin into the conversation. He's a lawyer, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and a visiting fellow at the Nixon Center. David, you wrote a piece in the National Review that was pretty critical of the Amnesty report. Do you subscribe to the view that the people who wrote this are anti-American?
Well, I don't know if they're anti-American. I do know that they display a remarkable lack of balance in structuring their arguments, and I also know that we're going to get into it a little bit more, I hope, are not aware of the real problems to human rights or real threats to human rights and human dignity that we're all facing in the 21st century. But let me just say this, and I don't want to waste time on the semantics, and Bill and I have debated this before. I think the Amnesty shot itself in the foot with the clearly over-the-top use of the word gulag. I think Bill and most sophisticated American members of Amnesty International understand the problem. It would be better, frankly, if they repudiated this comment as being intemperate because, and I'm paraphrasing Charles Krauthammer, some words like Holocaust, some words like gulag have acquired such a discernible and sacred meaning that you really profane them by putting them, and I heard him say, well, it's not exactly literal. But I don't want to waste too much time
on that.
Well,
let's step from that, David, and let me ask you where did Amnesty cross the line in this report? Lots of criticism so far about Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib, and most of it has been pretty reasonable. Where's Amnesty crossed the line here?
I will say two things before we get to where they're wrong in criticizing American policy. Let me say this. My most fundamental problem with Amnesty's report is you have a lot of data, and unfortunately have a lot of data because a lot of human rights abuses, there are a lot of problems. You have to organize it in a way that prioritizes the gravest threats to human dignity, individual liberty. I think Amnesty International is living in a 20th century, displaying a 20th century mindset when the threats to human rights came primarily from states. And we still have states, of course, like North Korea, Iran, and whatnot that pose threats. But I think the biggest threat in the 21st century to human dignity is posed by pan-national terrorist organizations that fly planes into buildings, behead people, seeking to kill civilians by the thousands and the millions. And there's very little indication in the Amnesty's report that they understand that.
I'm going to stop you right there, David. We will pick that up when we come back after the break. A reminder to our listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour, a chance to dig in on Amnesty International's 2005 report on the USA. We'd like your thoughts. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. The report by Amnesty International is still sending shockwaves through the political community in the United States. In fact, a lot of people are still paying attention to suggestions that Guantanamo Bay has become this symbol of human rights abuses. Amnesty International is extremely critical of the fact that the senior leadership of this country has not taken the kind of investigative approach. They're calling for a blue ribbon congressional or independent inquiry into what's going on in the prison since 9/11. We have here with us on the program the executive director of Amnesty International USA, Bill Schultz. David Rivkin, who's a contributing editor of National Review magazine, is joining us from a studio in New York. And David, I just want to come back with you to if I can, complete this point that you're making about terrorism. Are you saying that after 9/11, the rules of dealing with prisoners, the whole definition of human rights as we have understood it over the past 50 years, has changed?
Not at all. What I'm saying is, and 9/11 is a manifestation of the problem, but in the 21st century, a considerable portion, if you will, of the threat, the challenge to individual dignity, human rights, individual liberty comes not from states, even though states' repressive authoritarian regimes are still part of a problem, comes from pan-national regimes that want to engage in gender apartheid, that denigrate women, that want to kill civilians, that want to destroy democracy, who want to impose theocratic
Okay, but all Amnesty is saying is that these people deserve a proper trial, that people in this country need to know where the prisons are, the basics.
I understand, and I hope to get into it. No, but let me clarify. Amnesty International report is not just about the United States. Amnesty International annual report, as Bill knows very well, is a sort of a panoramic picture of the global threats to human rights and individual liberty. I believe they do a grave disservice to their mission and to the readers of that report by not pointing out that important portion of non-state threat to individual liberty. I'm not at all suggesting that because of a threat we should somehow skip and mistreat prisoners. Okay, Let me just try and clarify it one way if I can, David,
and that is if there had been a chapter here in which Amnesty had pounded its fist on the table about beheadings and the behavior of the Al-Qaeda people and the insurgents in Iraq, then the argument that you're making now wouldn't have any force.
But they're not doing it, if I may. It's exactly right. I'm not at all suggesting because I hope we'd get into some debate about whether or not they're portraying American policy correctly. But all I'm saying is it's like if you have an environmental report that portrays the environmental threats to humanity, and in amidst global warming, it talks about the threats of water pollution and waste problems, but it doesn't mention global warming. You and I would agree that it's extremely unbalanced.
Okay, let's see from Bill Schultz if he feels that
there's,
the priorities
if I may, there's
are
some
wrong
mentioning
here.
Of problems with beheadings and whatnot. There's certainly nothing like a comprehensive portrayal of a nature of a non-state threat.
Okay, Bill Schultz.
Well, David clearly has not familiarized himself with all of Amnesty's work over the years. Amnesty has repeatedly denounced Al-Qaeda and related terrorists. Islamic terrorists in various different countries are constantly under Amnesty's scrutiny and monitoring and attack. Over the years, Amnesty has entered into conversations with the PDK in Turkey. We have had significant impact on the IRA when it was practicing terrorism, on Basque separatists, the ETA. Most recently, we have issued a complete report on Palestinian suicide bombers. David, you're simply wrong about that. Now, it's true that this report doesn't have a separate section on terrorism, and that's because under our current international system, it is states, governments, that are held to account in terms of international law when they have treaty obligations. And Amnesty bases its human rights findings on treaty obligations, on international human rights law, which is focused on states. Now, I am not saying for a minute that we can't enter into conversations at the appropriate levels about how international law may need to be modified in certain respects to acknowledge the different security needs that exist. Security is a human right, too. David and I don't disagree with that, with one another about that in any way, shape, or form. Amnesty is attempting to hold one universal standard up and to judge every country in the world against that standard and to judge terrorists against that standard. And Amnesty has consistently denounced terrorism whenever it has occurred.
And so, David, doesn't the thrust of the report end up in that sense then trying to hold the United States to a higher standard of human rights? If the leaders of this country want to, as they do on an almost weekly basis, continue to criticize the behavior of other states in the country, is Amnesty wrong to be saying, you know what, we deserve better in the United States?
They're wrong, but let me just, 10 seconds, point out this. This is the premier report that Amnesty puts out. This is their flagship report. The notion that in a world of many news, pieces of information, where comes the time to send your most powerful message to the world, in that particular message, the threat posed by non-state actors is downplayed. That's a fact. All those other things that Bill said about the other reports are true. But we both know how important it is to set the right priorities in the most important message. Now, I don't mind having the United States judged by the highest possible standard. I do mind that you have fundamental misrepresentations of what is going on. One thing, let me start sort of backwards with the nature of investigations. We have had almost a dozen investigations, as Bill well knows, including an independent investigation. We, on a bipartisan basis, where in addition to former Secretary of Defense Schlesinger, you had a former highly respected Democrat member of the Senate from Virginia, Chuck Robb, and a number of other respected individuals. How many more investigations do we need?
Just one.
To have to satisfy? But it's interesting. I want your listeners to appreciate the point. And Bill, I think, was very candid. His problem with these investigations is they do not substantiate the proposition, the mythological proposition, but I think that Amnesty is putting out, but there is somehow a senior policy-level culpability by this administration.
That's because they didn't investigate that, David. That's not what they investigated.
No, but he said the reason we know that there's not been an acceptable investigation because that point has not been elucidated by them.
Those commissions that you just mentioned were not charged to investigate people in the Justice Department who provided rationales for the president to break the law. They were not charged to investigate Secretary Rumsfeld's 27 rules of interrogation, four of which his own military lawyers required him to withdraw because they were in violation of U.S. treaty obligations. None of those things have been investigated by all of those panels that you've just described.
Connection listeners, have the investigations gone far enough, or does more need to be looked into? Does an independent investigation need to look further up the chain? We're at 1-800-423-8255. We're taking a call from Louisville, Kentucky. Chris is joining us. Hello, Chris.
Yes, Hi. I heard over the weekend concerning the United States requesting of China to come clean on its civil rights abuses concerning Tiananmen Square. And my question to you all is, how could the Bush administration get us into the position where China could come back with the retort, you need to worry about your own civil rights abuses?
Exactly.
I think this is an atrocious situation that the Bush administration has put us in. I'd like your comments.
How ironic is it that the United States, quite appropriately, has demanded that those who have been disappeared into the Chinese prison system because of their participation in Tiananmen Square or support for it or being family members related to those involved, that the Chinese ought to come clean about that, while we at the same time are arguing that we don't have to do that at all. Now, look, one of the reasons why this is such a problem and so dangerous for the United States is that the United States is representing itself as the gold standard of democracy, representing itself as fighting a war on terror in defense not just of our homeland, it's in defense of the principles of freedom and respect for the rule of law. The war on terror is being fought in defense of human rights, at least if we listen to President Bush and his often eloquent statements about that. And so if the United States then is guilty of some egregious violations of human rights itself, whether Amnesty has a full report in its annual report on terrorism or not is not relevant to this point. If the United States is itself guilty of egregious violations, its entire integrity in demanding Chinese changes or indeed in convincing the Muslim world that the war on terror is not a war against Islam, but is in fact a war in defense of democracy and respect for the rule of law, all of that goes down the drain.
David. Let's just get some facts out here, because the key word is if. Let me say very simply, the United States is not, repeat, not guilty of anything approaching systematic or widespread abuses. And facts are very important, very basic facts. We have had over 70,000 individuals detained and captured and detained during the Afghanistan and Iraq conflict. Out of that multitude of people, we roughly have 320, 330 allegations of abuses, of which approximately 100, ranging from 20-plus people killed, some mistreated, some tortured, some minor ones, has come to the table. It's very important to understand that percentage-wise, relative to the number of people in detention, relative to the number of troops in the field, we have the best record, ladies and gentlemen, of United States or any other country in human history, better than in World War I, better than in World War II, better than in Vietnam, and better in Korea.
So, David, when the Chinese say that we don't have to listen to you because you have your own human rights problems
at home, it's an excuse, it's rhetoric, it's nonsense. My point is very simply is this. In any kind of allegations, be it corporate environmental problems, tax cheating, if you look at the facts and you say that the level of violations is below that of that company, that entity, that country ever registered before, does that give you a basis to suggest somehow, even theoretically, that there's massive wrongdoing emanating from the top? Or do we have a different problem? And that problem, very frankly, is given human nature, every time you put people in detention, in civilian, do you know that we have lower rate of abuses in military facilities than in civilian penitentiaries, federal or state?
That's a very important fact.
With respect, you're just blowing in the wind about this 300 abuses out of 70,000. You have absolutely no idea how many abuses have taken place, and neither do I.
These are alleged abuses.
For you to suggest that all of the, every single time an accusation has been made against the United States, the initial response of the military, authorities, and others has been to deny it or to downplay it. And every single time when the true facts have come out, we have seen that there was, in fact, more to the story. It happened with the killings at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. The military's first response was those people killed themselves or they were injured without any reference to U.S. military action. And we now know that is absolutely not the truth, that they were murdered. The same with the Quran. We know that accusations were made and a complete denial of any kind of desecration of the Quran. And yet, just a few days ago, the military itself had to acknowledge that there had been some. Now, my point is, We don't know, any of us, that there have only been 300 violations. And until we allow the international human rights groups into all of our detention facilities, as Sudan did, as Pakistan did, as many countries that are not champions of human rights do, until we allow the Red Cross into our secret detention facilities and into the facilities of countries like Syria that are holding prisoners we've rendered to them, none of us will know the truth.
Well, a couple of answers. First of all, I think it's intellectually remarkable to put in the same basket, if you will, U.S. detention facilities and Syria's facilities, because as far as that is concerned, I think going to be waiting a long time.
Well, the U.S. Is rendering prisoners to Syria's facilities.
U.S. has rendered individuals to other countries, which, by the way, again, very important for your listeners to appreciate, is not the practice that originated in this administration. Rendition has been a practice, if you will, for well over a century.
Well, I assure you,
rendition was quite extensive during the Clinton
Democratic administrations.
My point. Okay, let's forget for a second about Syria and other countries. We are providing access to Guantanamo, to Abu Ghraib,
not to
ICRC, which is. But forgive me. There's absolutely no practice I know of.
But ICRC was no critical of what it saw at Guantanamo Bay, David.
ICRC raised issues of prolonged isolation, and it broke its traditional practice of silence by condemning the United States for indefinite incommunicado detention.
Let's talk about the substantive issues. But you wanted to talk about, are we giving access to people? The problem is this: critics are painting things with a very broad brush. They're taking some facts, which indeed indicate that some abuses have occurred, for which people are being investigated, prosecuted, but they're also challenging fundamentally the entirely legal and legitimate framework which the administration has approached. And that framework is the laws of war. Under the laws of war, even POWs, lawful combatants, are detained not indefinitely. The word indefinitely is just a misnomer. Detained for the entire duration of hostilities, as Amnesty International knows very well. That's always been the law, because what else do you do? You release people, they're going to go back to fighting against you. We have released approximately 200 people, at least a dozen and a half of them, and that's a well-known fact covered in all the media, have gone back to fighting against the United States and coalition forces.
Let me just step here, if I can, David, and get back to some of our callers. We have a number who want to join us. To Durham, North Carolina, Charlie's on the line. Hi, Charlie.
How you doing?
I'm fine. What do you think?
Well, I think this Amnesty International report's the right way to approach this thing. You know, we've been getting a lot of misinformation from the administration for a long time. What I see is this guy David that you got on there, you know, he's sort of an administrative pogue. I mean, he's basically trying to explain the reasons for what we have going on. You look at this thing, we're out here trying to prove that democracy is the way to go, but yet we throw away democratic principles when it comes time to put people in prison. We lock them up.
Charlie, David's making the point that for all the people who have been locked up, there have been such a small number of reported abuses.
That.
No?
How would I know? I mean, all I've got to go by is the guys that are, it's like the fox in the chicken coop, you know? We're missing a few eggs, but nobody's looking at all the chickens.
Would you be happy with a Senate investigation here, or do you need some kind of...
Yeah, I'd like to keep it here at home. I don't want to see an international group get involved in here, because then I do think that this guy David might have a point. You'd have some kind of a political agenda. But I think, you know, let's have a real investigation. It gets higher than privates and spec fours and corporals. I mean, these people are following a policy. Yeah, they probably went overboard, but you know what? Let's find out the truth. And the real truth is the administration policy is that these people are not POWs. They're some kind of a special prisoner because we label them, quote-unquote, terrorists.
Or enemy combatants. Charlie, let me just step in here. We've only got a minute till our next break, and I want to make sure that David has a chance to respond. David, why not have such an investigation? If you're right, then the investigation will show that.
Look, if it were up to me, I suppose I would have another investigation, but quite frankly, very important for your listeners to appreciate. There are fundamental conceptual differences. Amnesty International and most humanitarian NGOs want to use a criminal justice paradigm where once you get somebody, you have to charge them specific offenses, you have to have a speedy trial. That is emphatically not the way you deal with people you capture in war. So if we have another investigation, it would not resolve the issues.
Unless perhaps it goes to an independent investigation or one that is being called for now by a number of senators from both sides of the aisle. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. Is it time for a review of the way that this country adheres to or does not adhere to the Geneva Conventions? Could that go so far as to see leaders of this country held to account by leaders and people in other countries, or is that too far? I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. About 10 days ago, Bill Schultz, executive director of Amnesty International USA, released a report that was highly critical of the way this country has been handling detainees, not just in Guantanamo Bay and at Bagram Air Force Base, but also at Abu Ghraib and at a number of prisons, the number of which is not even known, as well as the location. He said in the release of the report that the refusal of the U.S. government to conduct a truly independent investigation into the abuses at Abu Ghraib prison and other detention centers is tantamount to a whitewash, if not a cover-up, of these disgraceful crimes. Now, for the past 10 days, politicians have been debating that kind of remark, and just yesterday on ABC's News This Week, Joe Biden, ranking Democrat, on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, picked up one aspect that has gained some currency on both sides of the aisle, and that is the suggestion that maybe Guantanamo should be closed down.
I think we should end up shutting it down, moving those prisoners, those that we have reason to keep, and those we don't, let go. But the bottom line is, I think more Americans are in jeopardy as a consequence of the perception that exists worldwide with its existence than if there were no Gitmo.
1-800-423-8255. Would that make a substantial difference to close down Guantanamo Bay? Has it in fact become that symbol that the rest of the world will use indefinitely to criticize the way the United States says one thing about human rights and behaves in a different way? We're going to put that to one of our callers, to Peter, who's joining us on the line from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hello. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, I have three thoughts. One is that I basically agree with Amnesty International almost overall. But I guess the question is that ever since 9/11, which seems to have springboarded so much of this, seems to be used for just about justification for anything. And also for the fact that this administration, in my own view, lied profusely about the connection between 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. There you go then to Abu Ghraib, and you set up these things out of the rage that you believe it's all interconnected. And I guess the question also then is, when on earth is my country, the United States, that I deeply love, ever really going to take full responsibility for its own behavior?
I'm wondering, Peter, if it's your thought, perhaps, that this administration, having led the way for the past 4 years on this, can't do that because of the positions that have been taken to say, you know, this is why we have Guantanamo. This is why Abu Ghraib is important. This is why these links occurred. I mean, is this the kind of investigation or conversation? Are these the kind of questions that you can only ask, Peter, after this administration is out of office?
That's an awfully good question. I don't know, but I mean, as an American who believes in the international principles and in the democratic principles, I have seen absolutely no evidence of this from these people at all in their behavior, either in national government or in international behavior. And I would like things to be thought of a little bit better, because there are many of us who are, you know, just enormously distressed about this. And the distress should be evident, in my view, to all Americans, red, blue, white, purple, I don't care. I mean, we really should be taking responsibilities, and we also should be really beginning to learn a little bit more about our own history, which we...
Peter, let me stop you there if I can, because I'm interested in hearing from David if this is, these are the questions that can even be asked or answered. Is that part of what we're looking at now? Because the administration has its own record to defend, that there's going to be a kind of determination not to acknowledge something, some of the aspects that are marked in the Amnesty report.
Look, I think that in a way that's absolutely unprecedented in the annals of human history, you have a near contemporaneous, because look, in a lot of bad things have historically happened in wars, including wars that this country has waged, and you're absolutely right, typically serious investigations and accountability has not taken place until years later. What's unprecedented here is how many investigations have taken place enormously objective, enormously fair, both by various entities within the Defense Department, about any kind of political pressure involvement. Can you imagine if there was any political effort to muzzle or pressure those people?
Okay, but David, speak to the point that Bill made a little bit earlier, if you would, that the investigations don't look high enough up that.
No, but this is a misnomer. For example, the Schlesinger report, the Schlesinger Commission was specifically tasked to look at the causes of abuses in Abu Ghraib, for example. And was their conclusion, and I know it's not politically correct in some circles, but these were individual wrongdoing by individuals on one particular shift. And again, basic level of human logic. There were a number of shifts in Abu Ghraib. If those abuses, anything else aside, stem from administration policy, just as a matter of probabilities, wouldn't you see the abuses on more than one shift? Your listeners should appreciate the fact that all of these abuses occurred on only one shift. Okay?
Well, David, your notion that this was just the whim of a few intelligence officers or prison guards is belied by the president's own words. On February 7, 2002, President Bush issued an executive order that said that prisoners were to be treated in accordance with the Geneva Conventions, quote, to the extent appropriate and consistent with military necessity. Now, that created a huge loophole, a huge green light. And frankly, the Geneva Conventions and the Convention Against Torture does not allow a contingency to the extent appropriate or contingent with military necessity.
That is a serious mistake.
And let me just say, delighted as I am that you have joined Amnesty International in our call for a Blue Ribbon Commission, let me just say that your notion that we are only interested in a criminal justice paradigm here and not a war paradigm is completely wrong, and I'll tell you why. Our criticism of Guantanamo Bay from the very beginning has not been that these prisoners were not treated as common criminals. Our criticism has been that contrary to the requirements of the Geneva Conventions, the captor nation, in this case the United States, has not taken the disputed question of the prisoner's prisoner of war status to what the conventions require and call a, quote, competent tribunal, unquote. That is what we have said. And if the United States had done that, And the ruling of that competent tribunal might well have been that these were not prisoners of war, but the United States arrogantly refused to follow the conventions. And if it had followed the conventions, my guess is that world opinion would have been far less powerfully against the Guantanamo Bay detentions. Oh. My guess is that we wouldn't be seeing, delighted as I am we are now, the New York Times, Senator Biden, columnist Thomas Friedman, and others joining Amnesty International for calling of the closure of Guantanamo.
And the Washington Post slamming in. But it's very important to explain what Bill and I are talking about. There is a provision in the Geneva Convention 3, Article 5, that says, in case of doubt as to your status, you're entitled to a decision by a competent tribunal. And emphasize the word, in case of doubt. Let me suggest to you that the detainees in American custody have gotten more due process than anybody has ever gotten at any time since the Geneva Convention was signed.
You're talking about the people in Guantanamo Bay as well?
I'm talking about people in Guantanamo Bay. Let me give you just two examples. Do you know how Canada, not some bad authoritarian country, do you know, Bill, how Canada implements Article 5? Canada implements Article 5 not by giving people access to lawyers or having elaborate opportunities to cross-examine, by having one officer review a file in case of doubt. Britain had a similar system in Gulf War I. What your problem is that your view of what is a competent tribunal and the level of due process that people get in case of doubt is the criminal level of due process, complete with lawyers, complete with opportunity to cross-examine individuals. POWs never gotten that level of due process.
So you would say that Guantanamo Bay should not be closed down, David?
Of course not, because if we close Guantanamo, this is not a debate about a symbol. This is not a debate about the location. Amnesty International and much of the rest of the world is trying to deal with those problems as if it were, despite Bill's denial, criminal justice problems and not laws of war issues. From the very beginning, this administration has given people an opportunity detained in Guantanamo and in other places to challenge their status.
Oh, David. Well, now, wait a second. Hang on a second. For the first two years, there were no charges. There were no trials. There was lawyers allowed and no access to family.
It is
David.
Not. There
David,
were charges
what did the Supreme
is a misnomer.
Court rule when it turned back the administration's argument that those prisoners had no right to access to the U.S. judicial system?
That is correct.
The administration tried repeatedly to deny access to lawyers.
That is correct, but you heard nothing what I said. Access to lawyers is not ever and has ever been a requirement of a Geneva Convention.
I didn't say that. I said the Supreme Court ruled against the administration's position on both
those
Supreme
Court, this is spinning. The Supreme Court, okay, in the case styled Rasool, has ruled on a very narrow issue of whether or not courts have jurisdiction on Guantanamo. That has nothing to do with what level of due process detainees who want to challenge their
There's
situation
There's no, never been a
Let me, if
tribunal.
I can, step in
That's
here.
There is to
I want to get back to the callers. They've been very patient. To Toronto in Ontario, Jason's joining us. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
What do you think?
I only tuned in a few minutes into your program. I didn't hear the whole dialogue. But I think it's appalling that Amnesty International, you know, there's tons of countries around the world. You never hear a word about the political prisoners in Syria, and the tons of dictatorships. Like
well,
Castro.
Actually, Jason, it is written up in the annual report. It does a country by country survey. You're right in pointing out that over the past couple of weeks, all the attention has been on what Amnesty said about the U.S. Are you saying that Amnesty has gone too far here, that it should not criticize the United States administration?
I definitely think so. I mean, the fact of the matter is that these people aren't POWs. You know, they're not fighting for any country. They're terrorists. They don't represent any nation. They're just terrorists that kill whoever they can. They are the ones that are against the rule of law.
But of course, that is the problem.
Jason, hang on a second. I'm not cutting you off here. I want to let Bill Schultz in and then back to you.
The problem with your assertion, Jason, that they are terrorists, and I have no doubt that some of them are indeed. But the problem is that we don't know which ones are and which ones aren't. There was a major story in the New York Times just yesterday that described the case of a Turkish man who had gone to Pakistan and had been taken not off of a battlefield but off of a bus and has been in Guantanamo Bay without any opportunity to appeal or to defend himself for the last 2 to 3 years.
Okay, I'm not in disagreement that there could be specific cases.
Well,
that
all we're asking is for there to be appropriate processes for people's cases to be reviewed and adjudicated beyond just the so-called review panel of the U.S. military. That's all we're asking.
By the way, if you're going to talk about the Supreme Court in a companion case, Stout Hamdi, specifically acknowledged an opinion signed by Justice O'Connor, who is regarded as a very centrist justice, that the level of due process to which the detainees are entitled would be satisfied in an Article 5 type review.
Let me, if I can, just hear one more comment from Jason before we say goodbye to him.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, you see... The reason why you hear about these cases is because since the U.S. is a democracy and they're open, so you know other countries in the world you don't even hear about it because their prisons and their human rights abuses are secret and.
Jason, I'm sorry, you're just wrong. You hear about them, and often you hear about them because of Amnesty International's reports. We monitor 149 countries in this report. We're consistently involved in exposing the abuses in prisons around the world. And if the world hears about them at all, it's thanks in large measure to Amnesty International.
One thing, by the way, 99% of information about problems in Abu Ghraib and other places has come out of administration's own internal investigations. Your caller makes an important point.
But David, on that point, let me just say that Amnesty raised concerns about abuse of Iraqi prisoners in 2003, 1 year before the pictures came out, and it was only after the pictures came out in public, they had been held by the military for 3 months, only after the pictures came out that the administration started giving some of this information.
Let's try and get back to our callers, Hilda. Somerville, Massachusetts, Mikhail is joining us. Hello, Mikhail.
Hi.
Tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, let me first tell you what my background is. I spent 15 years in the Soviet political prisons, which are generally referred to as Gulag, and was the last one to be released from them in November 1990. I want to take the discussion back to the original issue, whether it was appropriate to use the term.
I think Amnesty International used it appropriately. And the reason is that every term relates to a notion which changes in time. The gulag of Stalin times, with millions of people being arbitrarily killed, and the gulag that I inhabited were two different systems, but only in their manifestations, not in their nature and principle. And what I lived through is regretfully not all that different from what Amnesty International now criticizes about Guantanamo. The main problem was not that somebody could arbitrarily kill me, but that we were denied access to information into the outside world. I had to hold up to 9 months long hunger strikes just to communicate with my mother by letters. This is what these people, who many of whom are indisputably terrorists, are experiencing now. I find the arguments that I'm hearing from the, let's put it this way, administration side, quite disingenuous. When they're telling, oh, it's just a few out of the many, it's a bit joke. At the end of the Soviet system, we were just a few out of 300 million that populated the Soviet Union. Nevertheless, it was at the focal point of the presidential administrations in Washington. We had all the attention. Why? Because the communists were the enemy.
So in this sense, Mikhail, you're saying that symbols do matter.
Symbols are exceedingly important. I believe that they're, aside from science, and I am a scientist by my first career, aside from science, there are no facts. There is only perception of facts. And the perception of what is going on in Guantanamo is horrible.
Mikhail, I'm going to step in here. I just want a quick word from David Rifkin first to start. David?
It's important to underscore, for any scientist I think would appreciate, the perception is not always reality. I agree with you that in order for something to qualify as a gulag, it does not have to encompass millions of people. But you are fundamentally misguided, Mikhail, about the nature of the situation in Guantanamo. My point, by the way, about the abuses being few.
I need you to be quick here, David.
Yeah,
we're really short for time.
The people who are in Guantanamo are not there because of their political views, and they are not being held indefinitely and incommunicado. They're there because they're enemy combatants captured on or around the battlefield, as it's always been in war. Well, that is a fundamental difference.
That's just your assertion, David. There's no proof that everyone there was an enemy combatant. You know that very well. And I'm delighted you've joined us in our call for a Blue Ribbon panel. I hope you'll go public even more with that.
Mikhail, I thank you for your call. Bill Schultz, Executive Director of Amnesty International USA, and David Rifkin, lawyer based in Washington, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, I thank you for being with us as well on the program. If you're interested in finding out more about what's in the report and looking at other links, you can go to our website. We are at www.theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.